Matt Dune, everybody, the first Sunday in April.
And earlier this week, we had those April showers, and perhaps not too far down the road, we'll be getting the first robin sighted in our area. Sure sign the spring is officially here. On the program today, we have a most interesting guest, and to introduce him to you right now, here's Gary Peck.
Our guest today on Memories of Music is Mr. Sam Farrelly, born in Italy. Mr. Farrelly worked with the Canadian National for approximately 40 years and a few months with the Ontario Northland, and our topic today will be railroading in the Sudbury District. However, before we begin our interview portion of the program, I would like to turn the program back to the music host. Sam Farrelly is our guest today on Memories of Music, and welcome to the program, Mr. Farrelly. When did you come over to Canada? I understand you indicated you were born in Italy in 1907, I think it was.
That's right.
And when did you come over to Canada?
1923.
23. And what was it like traveling from Europe to Canada back in the 20s?
To tell you the truth, I never liked to go back, and I counted the, I can still say, I was seasick on the boat.
Seasick?
Yeah.
And, I think that was a common occurrence for many.
Oh boy. When I come to New York, I see the Liberty, she go ahead, don't go back anymore.
When you saw the Statue of Liberty, you felt that you were home at last, and that was it. So you've never traveled back on boat? Never traveled back?
No. I went once at St. John, New Brunswick, 3 hours across the bay there.
Oh, yes.
And boy.
That was too much, even.
Oh, yeah.
Why did you come to Canada?
Where I come from, it's a farming country.
You came from the center of Italy, I think you said.
Yeah, the center of Italy, yeah.
Right.
No, but I mean the mm-hmm. hometown where I come from.
Yes.
We all live on a farm.
Right.
And you know, sometime over the ages, some day, some year, you might be lucky to mm-hmm. the farm, you know, a nicer crop, but next year it might be, you know.
So it was fairly risky work.
Yeah.
You came to Canada because you viewed it as a land of opportunity.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You were 23 years old at the... No. You,
16, I think,
you were in your teens. Did you come by yourself?
Yeah.
On your own?
That's right, yeah.
That must have been quite a decision for a teenager, I should think, at that time.
Yeah, of course, he had an uncle, North Bay.
Oh.
He's the one, he signed the paper for me.
I see, so otherwise, you had some assistance there.
Yeah, otherwise I couldn't come, eh?
No.
She had North Bay.
How long did it take you to travel?
Well, it took me 8 days on a boat, and then they hold me the whole 5 days in New York there before we come off the boat. And once I come off the boat, I had to stay another 7 days in the hospital there, and I couldn't my eye.
Mm-hmm.
The little carbon went in one my eye, and getting quite red, and the mm-hmm. eye specialist said to you got to wait until your eyes clear up.
So you were checked by the doctors.
Yeah.
Why were you held 5 days before you could disembark?
Because they had another 3 boat hit us. And you know, there's a doctor who only worked so many hours, eh? And then you got to wait till that's it.
These were boats full of people coming
that's
over
right.
to
that's
North
right.
America.
That's right, yeah. I came over the Comte de Waiter.
What would it have cost for passage at that time? Do you recall?
I got to think it was... I don't know, between 3,000-4,000 lire, I think. And the time was a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to work, you know, you work 8 hours, more than 8 hours, you only get, you know, 5 lire and 3 meals, that's all.
8 hours for how many? Five?
5 lire, that'd be $1, eh?
$1
and three meals.
So that would take quite a while, certainly. Very definitely. So you came, you made your way from Montreal, I'm sorry, from New York City, rather.
To Toronto.
To Toronto.
And then Toronto to North Bay.
Came up to North Bay.
Yeah.
And stayed in North Bay for a short while, I assume.
Yeah, a short while, yeah.
What prompted you to come to Capriol?
Well, the job, eh? I came to, as I say, came to work for the CNR. I went to Ostrom there, eh?
All right, now, did you hear about the job in North Bay? Did you hear that the CN was hiring?
Well, no, I had one of my cousins. He was a foreman up there, eh?
He was a foreman on the CNR.
So you wrote me a letter to come up there, he got a job for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you were in your teens at that time when you started with the CNR, and you didn't start off in Capriol, but you started north on the line.
Yeah,
the
west of Capriol.
West of Capriol. Ostrom was the...
Ostrom, yeah. That's a 69-mile west of Capriol.
69 miles. And what was your job at that time?
Section man.
You were a
track man, that's all.
Worked on the track.
On the kind of track, yeah.
And what was that, Ostrom?
Just at the section house and the...
A section?
It was a foreman and three men, that's all.
A foreman and three men
and
a section.
And one dog.
And one dog. And lots of isolation at times.
Oh, yeah, lots of moose.
Lots of moose.
And rabbits, all the kinds of it. Partridge, all the kinds of it.
Well, I assume you didn't stay there forever. Where did you go from Ostrom?
Well, then, from there, I moved to Bathinal. Bathinal is a 95 and a half mile from Cape Yarl.
95 and a mile north? 95
west,
and a half?
Cape
west.
Yarl.
West.
On the other side of Gugama. You know
on
Gugama?
The, okay, yes.
Well,
yes.
It's on the other side of Gugama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I worked there until 1928, in July, I think it was. Then I beat the Coristin. You know, it was a kiosk at the Coristin, you know, 22 mile.
Oh,
on
yeah.
On the side of Brent.
On this side of?
It used to be, they got some tourist place at a kiosk.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So you went back there, or
yeah,
started, went to there?
The section used to call it Coristin, when
yes.
I worked there.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there for a little over a year. And then they qualified me as a foreman.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to get the foreman job. And then, you know, job come open here, you know, as a section man. And I beat and I got it.
In Cape Yarl.
Yeah.
When you were at kiosk, you were working as a
track man
again, or
yeah.
still as a track
yeah.
man. And you kept working your way up.
Yeah.
Until you became...
Then they classified me as a foreman.
As a foreman.
Yeah. See, section man is section foreman. Section foreman is foreman, like, you know.
I see.
Section man is just in the labor.
So when did you come to Cape Yarl?
I moved here in January 1930.
January of 1930.
That's right.
Fortunate to have a job, that being the Depression.
Well, I bid.
Yes.
Well, I had a seniority then.
Yes, you had built up your seniority.
That's
and,
right, yeah. That's why, otherwise, you'd never come in here.
No.
And then I had a hard time with the during the Depression there, and all. I had, you know, six, seven men behind me by that time. But then, you know, they started to lay off. I was the junior man left here.
You were the last one who was kept.
Yeah. Then I was lucky that I got a job as a runner snowplow.
Mm-hmm.
And then used to keep me in the wintertime for the snowplow, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And I ran the snowplow for 25 years, from here to, well, 20 years, not 25 winter, we say, from here to Folliette.
From here to Folliette, you operated the snowplow?
That's right, for 25 winter.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I went to Fazer Brandt and the Fazer Paddy Sound, too.
All the way down to Perry Sound?
Yeah, well, sometime, you know, the other plow was out, they need an extra one, well, they, you know,
mm-hmm.
he got to go, he can't refuse, eh?
Mm-hmm.
He got to go.
When you weren't operating the snowplow, what were you doing?
Well, I just operational plow when the plow goes out.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it comes in here, I had to work.
Mm-hmm.
I had to work on a track, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Picking ice, or shoveling snow on, or changing
sure.
the rail and all.
Sure, all of those jobs
yeah.
that we associate with railroading.
That's right, that's right.
You retired in the 1960s?
Four.
1964, after just a little over 40 years.
In May.
Well, in May of 64, after over 40 years of service
yeah.
on the railroad, you worked for the Ontario Northland for a while.
Yeah, in the summertime, on the extra gang of work. I never work on the try on the section, man. Extra gang of there, I work. You know, this gang, like a...
Yes. When was this?
1925. Yeah.
You wouldn't have lost your seniority with the Canadian National?
Well, I did.
Yes. You only had a couple of years seniority, I suppose. Or...
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I lost a little bit, you know, with Dale Moore, you know, but...
Why would you have switched over to Ontario Northland? Did you think that that was a better opportunity at the time?
Well, the trouble at that Ostrom there, you know, then they cut one man, who were two men on the foreman, eh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, they cut one man?
Yeah.
And you were the...
Yeah, and I was a left there.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, there's one little trouble there. One time he had the handicaps marked by train, eh? And I got so scared, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The time is not like, you know, they got a phone, they got a, they go to the dispatch, they give a line up, and other time you have nothing. Okay? You just,
what were you concerned about, the fact that you were isolated?
Well, no, we were, I was too young, we said, to work, you know, a job like that, you know, where you have to get a kill any time, eh?
Yeah, it was dangerous.
It was danger, like, you know?
Yes.
So, a friend of mine, you know, he was working North Base, they come on here, just a cough in the chest, you know?
Sure.
But then I started to realize a little bit after, eh, and... when I worked on the gang in 1925, I said, gee, I said, this job here, I said, they never get, you know, I never work steady because
mm-hmm.
extra gang, you know, it's just a
seasonal
summer
work.
Summer
yes.
job, eh?
Yes.
And then in the winter time, if you make a couple hundred dollars, you know, you go there at 20, 25 ahead of time, you got a big room on the boat and all that, eh? Mm-hmm. First thing you know, you know. So then I set my mind and said, I'm going to come back to work.
You're going to go back to the CN and you're going to hang in there.
And that's it. That's what I did, you know.
And eventually get located where you wanted to be.
That's it. Yeah, then the senior started to go, and then you go.
Started to work your way up, and eventually you got into Cape Real. I assume at that time, Cape Real was the place to work, that most people, if not all, were trying to end up in Cape Real.
Well,
in this area.
Of course, Cape Real all the time, you know, there was a small population, a little smaller population, you know, mm-hmm. But the other, everybody had a job at that time.
They had the facilities here, and it was permanent.
Yeah, everybody had a job. Yeah, they know. The car shop over up here, the box car was full there, you know. Mm-hmm. People, the roundhouse was up here, the engine was full there, you know, steam engine, you know.
Okay. All right, I think we've gained an idea as to your career with Canadian National, and we'll turn the program over now to our music host. When we return, I'd like to talk about railroading more specifically and certain types of work that you had and what it was like working on the CN. But first, we'll turn the program back to our music host. Sam Ferrelli is our guest today on Memories of Music. Mr. Ferrelli, having worked for over 40 years with the Canadian National Railway. Mr. Ferrelli, he started off in the siding of Ostrom, north of Cape Real.
West of Cape Real.
West of, I keep saying north.
69
miles west. I've never been up there, I must say. What was it like?
Don't go.
You wouldn't encourage it.
No.
What was it like up there in the 20s?
Oh, very lonesome. Just the section I was there, when I went there was the former three men, and they cut the one off, and they were just the former two men.
So they were from a labor force of four to three, depending. Mm-hmm. And what was your job? You had to look after a section of the track, I assume. That was one of the responsibilities.
Well, of course, I was one of the foreman, the section foreman. I was only a section man, just track man. Eh?
So you looked after a section of the track to make sure that it was...
Yeah, we had a seven-mile track.
7 miles to look after.
Yeah.
The four of you?
Yeah, three.
Three of you.
Yeah.
Three of you.
At the wintertime, three.
Right. To me, when I think of a place like Ostrom, I think of a very isolated area, and it must have been...
It's worse than that yet.
Worse.
Oh, yeah.
Worse than isolated.
Oh, yeah, worse than that yet. A place called Gladwick. Oh, my God.
Tell us about it.
Eh?
Tell us about it. What was it like up there?
Well, it's only bush. What do you see? Moose and wolf and fox and there's lots of rabbits, lots of partridge.
Right.
You know.
But you soon saw your fellow.
We used to eat lots of free meat sometime, you know.
Right.
We could take like rabbits and we had no gun to kill moose, but I had a good arm, you know, with a stone to kill rabbits and
and
a partridge.
Probably do that just to break the boredom anyhow at times,
oh,
I suspect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, you lived in a section house or whatever it was called.
Yeah, in a section house, yeah.
Was it a boxcar?
No.
No?
A house like this. You had a three-bedroom upstairs.
Oh, it was a house.
But it was a very cold. Well, the CNR house, eh?
The CNR house.
Yeah, but it was very cold. You know, one
Describe
night...
Describe it. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. One night?
One night, you know, it was a bedtime, old boys, ever cold. I thought I had to go upstairs because it was too cold, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So the stove wasn't on the stair. So I lit up the stove with the coal again, you know. And after I put the light off, I happened to look in the corner in the front room. And now the side, it was so nice, clear. The moon was shining nice. And you know, when I see the corner up there, the room there, I couldn't see the reflection of the moonlight on the side right through.
Mm-hmm. Right through the corner.
Yeah. And that's you know, I wanted to watch that house.
Yes, and you would have had a box stove in the house?
Yeah.
Tell us about a typical day in Ostrom. How did it begin? You'd get up early, I assume? Had to tend the fire?
Well, I started there. The first time I went there was on the 14th of October.
Mm-hmm.
And, you had to get up in the morning, you know, we say, at 5:30, because before you light your stove and boil some water to make up coffee and then cook your breakfast, and then you got to fix your lunch because you never eat. He never come back home to eat your lunch at home.
No,
because he had a pump car there, eh?
Yes, and wouldn't want to pump your way back.
you got no time,
no.
1 hour. You
no.
got 1 hour.
Yes.
You got no time to go no place. What you got to do, go on the bush, build a fire, and your sandwich is frozen like a piece of rock. You got to throw that out against the fire.
Yeah, throw that out. What time are you to start work? 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock.
You had to be on the job at 8.
That's right.
All right, so you got up at 5:30, and you started the fire. Got breakfast, made your lunch.
Yeah. And then, you know, you got to eat your breakfast and make your lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to go and bring some wood in,
mm-hmm.
prepare, because sometime in the night, you know, you, You never know. You might have come home late. It
might be dark when you got
yeah,
back.
Yeah, never know, eh? Mm-hmm. Because a couple of times we got caught with a snowstorm, eh? Mm-hmm. And dragging the hand car, you know, push the hand car, you know, to bring them home there. And it's a little bit, you know, hard for the night then. By the time you light the stove again and all of that. But if you got your wood in, well, you're all set. You only need to walk in there, wash and light the stove. And,
all right, so you'd be out working at 8, then lunch would be 1 hour. And what time did the day finish in terms of your work? 5 o'clock? Would you start back at 5?
5 o'clock was supposed to be the end of the day.
Would it take you an hour to get back sometimes?
No, but we used to work along, you know, 8 to 12.
Yes.
And then 12 to 1 is a lunch hour, eh?
Yes.
And then from 1 to 5.
Right, and then to get back to the house, how long might it take you?
Well, it
depends on how far. I know, depending on how far you were, but could it take up to an hour?
Well, sometime an hour, sometime half an hour,
yes.
And, you know. Yeah.
All right, so you'd get back.
But of course, no. 5 o'clock, we're supposed to be back at the section house.
Oh, be back to the house by
Yeah. Oh,
I see.
We're supposed to be back, because if we leave at 8 o'clock, you're supposed to be back at 5 o'clock.
Mm, I see.
Yeah.
Very cold there, I assume.
Oh, my God, the cold. Don't talk about the cold.
No, you're still cold from that experience.
55 to 60 was every day. 55 to 60 below zero every day.
55 to 60 below zero.
Every day.
You have to break the ice to get at your water.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
How did you get water there?
Well, the one on the for use of the house, like you wash your clothes, and we used to have a well there.
You had a well.
But the drinking water, we used to get it 2 miles west at my age 71. It was the spring water there. So we had a little wooden keg.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if it was a 5 gallon or what it was now. But they used to fill it out, and then every night, like, so you bring them in the morning, you leave them there,
yes.
At night you fill it in and bring them home.
You bring home a keg of water every night from 2 miles beyond.
Yeah, to drink.
Spring water.
Yeah, just to drink the water.
Just drinking water.
Yeah.
The water level in the well must have fluctuated. You were commenting that it was difficult to get the water out of it at times.
And then when it gets real in the middle of the winter, then the water goes right down to the water.
Down.
You have to go down with the... with a water pail and bring
dipper?
Him a cup of there and fill into the pail there.
You have to use a dipper to put the water into the pail. You climb down into the well to get the water.
Not a dipper. Dipper's too big. You have to use a cup.
And use that water over and over.
We went through hardship, I'm telling you. Not like now.
No, I can imagine.
6 minutes, they are lucky now. They got a cold and hot water. And they got everything inside. They don't have to go out at all.
You worked 6 days a week?
6 days.
You were paid for 6 days a week.
That's right, yeah.
What would you have earned back in 1923-24?
Well, $2 a day.
$2 a day.
Well, 25 cents an hour.
25 cents an hour.
For 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to 30.
Up to 30 cents an hour.
Yeah. After 1 year, you get 36 cents an hour. After 2 years, you get 38. That's regular pay. 38
mm-hmm.
cents an hour, that's it. That's
mm-hmm.
$3.04 a day.
What did you do on your day off?
We used to carry the water and boil the water and then wash the clothes and wash the floor and clean up the house, you know, but it's the only day that he could do that.
You'd work as hard, if not harder.
Well, it's harder than working on the track.
Working on the...
Because, you know, you got to do, you know, before it gets dark, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't come out on that day off. You couldn't get out.
No, even if you wanted, you couldn't get out. They won't let you out.
How long would you have stayed there at a time in Ostrom?
Well,
half a year, a year?
You mean before he...
Before you would come out.
Come out and then back again,
yes,
you mean, eh?
Yes, yes.
Well, I would just say maybe every... We used to come out every 6 months because to do like, you know, summer... For summer clothes and the fall for winter clothes, eh?
Well,
he kind of go.
So you'd come out, you'd stay in there for 6 months at a time.
You know,
you might come out twice a year.
Yeah, twice a year. And you're lucky if they send you too. Sometimes you have to write to somebody to send you some clothes because they won't let you go out sometimes.
They wouldn't let you out.
Yeah.
You couldn't get a pass on the train to... The train wouldn't stop.
No. Well, we had a local, but you had to have a pass, so you had to pay.
You had to pay for the pass.
Well, if I got to pay, you know, if I lose, you know, I lose a couple of days to go to North Bay.
Yes.
And then to pay my fare and I'll go to North Bay and back again.
Right.
I just want to stay North Bay because I got to work, you know, almost 15 days just for that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I should think so. That kind of a lifestyle would be very hard on a lot of people.
Yeah, twice.
Must have been. Some people can endure that and get by.
Yeah.
But I should think for some it must have been just pure hell.
Well, you see, the trouble is this. At the time of that set, that's what it was. It's not like it today.
People were accustomed to it. More were accustomed to it.
Well, you see, today, it could jump from one job to another.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like this job, somebody either quit or they fire you, but they're going to plumb insurance, you know what I mean? But at the time, there was none of such a thing.
No.
If you had the money, you eat. If you don't, you starve. But that's it.
No one was going to look after you.
Well, no.
No.
Like, except if you got a father and a younger boys, they got a father and a mother look after them. It's different. But like me, I had a number.
No. You had a job and you were thankful to have that job.
That's all, sure.
Tell us about some of your other work. You mentioned that you were involved with the snow removal in the section along here.
Oh, yeah. Then, you see, they classified me as a foreman, and then I started to get out of the job here and there, no foreman job. Then, you know, they up in 1939, and then I bit the job, like I said, on this snowplow.
Right.
From 1940, yeah. From Cabrillo to Fouillette.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there enough for 25 winter, you know, in deal a while. The last winter I retired, 1964.
Oh, I see. So that's what you were doing just about up to your
just on the winter time. But I used to go out on a plow, then back here and work, of course.
Did you ever encounter any train wrecks?
Oh, yes. I was in the extra gang for a lot of time, too.
Mm-hmm. What was the cause of the train wrecks? Debris on the track?
Well, I was on a lot of derailment, you know. Sometimes you find a broken rail, sometimes you find burned a journal on a boxcar, sometimes you know, broken Archibald on one of those cars.
So it could be mechanical, yes.
Yeah, it's a lot of different thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Could it be the speed sometime, you know?
Sometimes going too fast for the track itself.
You know, there's a big...
Some of those big turns, sure.
Yeah.
Were you ever involved in were you ever on the train when there was an accident, a derailment?
No. I was on the derailment, you know, you take it like, you know, when they were... See, I was assistant foreman at gang, too, you know, like... between Toronto, we said to Armstrong, okay?
Yes.
And down this way, far as Ottawa.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever encounter serious derailments where lives were lost?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a passenger train, they went down the river right here. It was washout here at just 4.5 miles from here.
4.5 miles west of here?
Yeah, 1930, July.
July 1930, there was a washout.
Yeah, and the passenger trail, some of the coach went right into the river there.
Went right into, what river would that be out there?
The Vermilion River.
Vermilion River.
Yeah.
And lives were lost.
That's right, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. All that just ever happened, you know. And then in the same year, down here, you know, place called, you know, on the other side of Skeed, at the village 129.
Mm-hmm.
The freight train, the other was out of there, the engine went off the track and the fireman died, the engineer died.
Five men died and the engineer. When was
this? The fireman.
The fireman. When was this?
1930. The same time it happened.
How would you get the engine back on the track?
Oh, the engine went down the river. Oh, we had to build a new track.
Had to build... What would you do with the engine?
With that auxiliary, like, you know, the auxiliary brought them up.
Oh, you would bring it up that way.
Oh, yeah.
You'd have to take track down to it.
Oh, yeah, he had to build a new track.
It must have been something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What are some of the...
Yeah, they go through the bush, build track.
Oh, I can well imagine.
Oh, yeah.
You'd encounter lots of wildlife. You might even encounter wildlife on the tracks as the trains were going through, would you not? Moose and deer, did you ever encounter?
Oh, yeah, lots of them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wolf, fox sometimes. Moose, quite a few moose.
Mm-hmm.
They get the more they get a kill, especially the moose is on the night, you know, when the train got a bright headlight.
They're attracted to the light.
Yeah, they kind of... I don't know, they say they get blind.
Yes.
The Indian people say that they get blind and they don't know where to go, you know.
Well, there's a fascination with the light, as we often are fascinated by fire. It may well be very similar.
Yeah.
I think we'll end at that point and return the program back to the music host, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about railroading in a few minutes. Sam Ferrelli is our guest today on Memories of Music. We've been talking about railroading. Mr. Ferrelli, you were working in this area... with the CN during the Depression. And what was it like? We hear the stories about how difficult it was, and I suspect that the railroad was one of the major forms of transportation for the unemployed, from what I understand. Would you have quite a few people riding the trains looking for work?
Oh, yeah, you think like, you know, every freight, doesn't matter which way it was going, east, west, or south, there was always full people. The boxcar, it was full of it. One time I remember I was at three senior policemen and the chief police from Capriol here, and the yard there, all the were the yard of the trains there, right?
Yes.
There were 200, I asked the chief of police, there was 277 men there.
277? Yeah. Where?
And sitting rails there on the track there, you know, with the...
Sitting by the track?
Yeah, with the freight going in and out, like, eh?
Yes, waiting for a ride.
Well, waiting for a ride, yeah.
These people were traveling free. Well, they were trying to sneak on.
No, no, just to get on the freight and that's it. What are you going to do with them? Yeah. What are you going to do with them?
Yeah.
You are. You want to get rid of them because, you know, here, they used to... here, the house right behind them here one time, you know, poor guy was called to go to work, was an engineer, eh? Mm-hmm. When he came to the bedroom, he was sitting on the window, he said, somebody was trying to get into the window, on the top of the back porch.
So the communities often would encourage them getting back on the trains so that they'd move on to another one.
Let them get out.
Yeah, and also they'd feel sorry for them, too, because they were unemployed and they...
Honest to God, you know, you ask my wife, I mean, the lunch we give here. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we have to quit it because they...
Yeah. There were just too many.
I had a family too, eh? You know sure. What I mean? You know,
Your heart would go out for
yeah.
these people.
But I give them, sure. I try to tell them about it, you know, when it yeah. comes to the end of it, eh?
Yeah.
I got to work yeah. for my kids.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
You were mentioning a few moments ago about a Polish fellow who walked across. What was the route that he traveled looking for work?
He told me, this was at Bethel there one time. He was
back in the Depression.
He was walking. It was 19... Well, it was, you know, 27, 26 or 27, I don't remember. He said he walked from Toronto to Winnipeg, to Vancouver, he said.
Toronto to Vancouver?
Yeah, he made the road twice, he said.
Made that walking. Trip twice?
Yeah. Sleep in the shack, sleep on along beside the track in the night, you know.
Looking for work?
Yeah. And then he said, whatever the section of gang, like it was... the form of the man, eh? They used to give him a number of your sandwiches, and he keep going. That's all the poor fellow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any other recollections about the Depression? What it was like in this area?
Well, it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
Then they cut us, you know, 10%, and then they cut us another 5%, and then they cut us off, you know, half a day on a Saturday.
They were cutting you back in wages,
yeah.
10%, 5%, and then half a day on Saturday.
Yeah. And we had to, it was hard to go to keep going. I never forget when I used to bring in about 300 ties here, 400 ties here. And I used to split the wood and deal 9.93 in the night after I do my day's work.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sunday we used to eat lunch around 10 o'clock, get the axe, go on bush, cut wood.
Go into the bush and cut some wood.
And deal maybe 5:30, then come home. And then be ready for Monday morning again to go to work.
Mm-hmm. How did people...
It was very hard.
Was the Depression particularly bad in a community like Capriol?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, it was. Because the people who had the job, they had the job of it. The one they had no job of, that's it.
There was no government assistance?
Nothing.
You had to rely on friends and and look about for work. It must have been very, very tragic
well,
for some families.
I think in the city they had the soup line, what they call it. You know, I don't know about the city, eh? But I talk about the Capriol, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We never had such a thing as soup line here in Capriol.
No.
No.
And your population would mushroom as the transients, transients came through.
And everybody used to walk, and nobody had a car.
No.
They can't afford to have a car. Everybody used to walk. I see the people, you know, from near where the water tank is up there now.
Yes, in Capriol.
And they work on the shop there. You know, we see our shop is there.
Mm-hmm.
They have to walk every morning, and back home every night.
Mm-hmm.
The lunch up on their shoulder, and that's for 6 days a week.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have a car at that time?
Nobody had a car.
Nobody?
No, the doctor had a car.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, you know, I think in 19... I don't know if it was 3-4 cars in Capriol all together.
When?
1925 or 1936.
Is that right?
Yeah.
25-26. Or 30?
No, 35-36.
35-36. Yeah. So it might have been 5 cars in the...
5-6 a car. I don't think it was any more than that.
So he wouldn't be taking any trips anywhere at all.
He took like a nip. He had a couple of truck.
Yes.
Dr. McLean. Dr. Lazy.
Mm-hmm.
3-4 train men that I know in the church, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of the personalities you remember working on the train? It must have been some real characters, some storytellers.
Would have been the...
Working on the railroad.
A train man or a section man? Or
yes, any at all. Some of the... Or if you can recall some of the memorable experiences you had working on the railroad. You know, just reflecting back over 40-some years, must have been some memorable experiences.
Well, the experience, you know, you take it like on a train, like we say. I used to know all of them a conductor there, eh?
Mm-hmm.
All the Sweezy, I used to know them, you know.
Sweezy?
Yeah, Sweezy, yeah. I know all of them. And, I know we say Cook, I know. McDonald, I know Wilson, I know lots of them.
Sure.
Lots of them, yeah.
You get to know all of them. How many people would there be working here in Capriol on the CN during the Depression? How many would have been working out of here?
Oh my God, that's pretty hard.
I know, that's testing your memory, but approximately how many would you think?
You mean the including the shop and...
Yes.
Oh God, I know.
It's hard to say. It was cut back, though, you were saying, during the Depression.
They quite a laid off another because, well, the transportation, come down, and if the train doesn't run, they don't need any man there because no box car to repair, you know what I mean? Cut down on the man too, eh?
Sure. When people travel out to Capriol, one item that's of particular interest to them, I think, is the locomotive that's been preserved out here.
Yeah.
And I noticed you're living right across from it. Tell us a little bit about that locomotive.
This one here?
Yes.
Well, I know this ancient one. She started out here in 1946, I think, yes?
That started in 46?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Or 47, I don't remember now. And she used to run the passenger train, number 3 and number 4, from Toronto to Armstrong.
Toronto to Armstrong, number 3 and number 4.
Yeah.
When was she retired?
Well, what year the diesel came here? I forget now. Once they bring the diesel here,
yes.
Then they moved this engine up west region.
They moved it west.
Yeah, and the west region.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the center region here. Right.
Right?
He went to the west region. And then, from the west region, they converted about the oil there.
Yes.
Because when she was around here, it was with coal, eh?
Mm-hmm.
But then when they brought them up there, they converted with the oil.
Converted them to oil.
Yeah.
I see.
And then she come back here, and they storage them right here in front of my house here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I would...
And a poor Angus Davy, the engineer, he run this engine first he used to run from the south of Paris to Capriol.
Yes.
And then he run from Capriol to Fouillette.
What was his name?
Angus Davy.
Heinz Davy.
Angus Davy.
I see.
Yeah.
And
the poor fellow, he retired. But this was west when he retired. When
right.
He brought him back here again.
Yes.
He used to come here every day to take a look at that.
He used to come down every day to take a look at that locomotive.
Sure, guy, yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Well, he ran for so many years.
Sure, brought back good memories, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I would imagine the railroad men in this community were pleased that a locomotive was left here. That was put on.
Oh yes.
Seems like an obvious, obvious location.
Well, something to remember, eh?
Sure.
Oh, they got the pump car there.
Yes.
They got the speeder, what they call it. Yeah, everything is right over there.
I think it's excellent. Quite a bit of interest in it. Tourists come out and look at it.
Oh, yeah. But the only thing of you have to put a fence in. They should see what they did before. They smash everything of the kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The young boys.
Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's at least they're trying to preserve it. And it's
a nice... You should see many people that come here in the summertime and they stop and look at it, you know.
Well, it's an important part of our history, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we'll return to our music host. When we come back, we'll wrap the program up.
Yeah.
Sam Ferrelli has been our guest today on Memories of Music. Mr. Ferrelli living in the community of Capriol and actually lived in this area pretty well since the 1920s. In this general area, you've lived north...
1930.
1930.
Yeah.
The community's changed a lot since you came in 1930, and what have been some of the major changes in Capriol?
Well, Capriol got bigger. It got way bigger than what it used to.
Yes.
And improved quite a bit. Like, you know, we said they got all of the street all paved. There would have before it was all sand, eh? No sidewalk.
Very dusty in the summer.
Yeah, I said, sure. And everybody got, lawn in the front of the house, and mm-hmm. which keep the town a bit of cleaner, you know, and mm-hmm. where before, you know, there wasn't exist that, eh?
No.
And they got a new subdivision done. There's quite a few houses built there.
Mm-hmm.
Now the subdivision across the track here, you know, mm-hmm. quite a few houses built there, you know, and so they improved quite a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. Then the CN moved the office from North Bay up here.
Mm-hmm.
They had to build another couple of buildings here, which, you know, mm-hmm. it boosted the town quite a bit, eh?
Well, you're living on Bloor Street. How long have you lived here in this particular house?
I bought this house in 1927.
1927?
Yeah, 3 years before I moved here.
So this whole area right here has changed a lot.
Yeah.
You knew 3 years before you came that you might want to live in Capriol. That's optimistic.
No, I tell you what happened. I happened that, you know, one time was a friend of mine, you know, mm-hmm. when it was Orca Bathanal.
Mm-hmm.
1927 on the spring, and he said, you know, that the we start talking about having money on the bank, like, you know,
right.
what I mean, put money on the bank.
Mm-hmm.
He said if you buy a house, you could double interest that you get on the bank, like, mm-hmm. by rent the house, eh? And the mm-hmm. talk and talk, first thing you know,
so you bought it as an investment
to buy this house here.
Sure.
I paid $1,500. Of course, it was no water work, no cellar.
No.
And I rent for $25 a month at the time.
Mm-hmm.
$25 a month. That was a lot of money at the time, $25.
Sure, it would be.
Yeah. But then I had to mm-hmm. I had to build a foundation, mm-hmm. put the water work in.
Right.
And put the furnace in, and mm-hmm. you know.
You worked with the railroad for over 40 years. You must have enjoyed the experience. You had to have if you worked
that long. Well, I did. One way I did, but the other way I had to. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You take like a double depression, where are you going to go?
You had the job because you needed it.
That's right. And after the depression, they see the thing is improving, but they don't know how far you're going to go.
No.
If you're ever going to quit one job or get to another, no, I already got, you know, secure in this job, we say.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I got enough seniority, enough service and all that.
Mm-hmm.
If I quit here and go to another job...
You lose that seniority.
I lose everything, and my term might won't last very long, but the lots of people they did... And they improve themselves quite a bit, but they went on the higher money.
Sure.
You see?
Well, there are advantages and disadvantages in that, very definitely.
Right.
But when you look back after working with them for 40-some years, you look back upon the company favorably, I assume.
Oh, yeah.
You enjoyed it. Yeah. Well, I think we'll wrap the program up on that note. Thank you, Mr. Ferrelli, on behalf of Memories and Music for being with us today. Certainly railroading in this area and in Capriol in particular is an important part of our history, and I feel our listening audience have gained considerably from your conversation with us today.
Yeah,
again,
well,
thank you.
Well, this is only a railroad town anyway, they call them, eh?
Sure. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And thank you for joining us this afternoon on CIGM FM Stereo for Memories and Music.